to this Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Episode number 43. As I said last week, macro photography could never be covered totally in just one or two episodes. I actually thought at the time that I would release two episodes for now and follow up with one more later as I gain experience in macro photography, and also as I gain more tips for you. As when I was preparing for last week though, I found that there's just so much more that I want to say on this subject that I'm going to keep going for another episode, making this initially a three-part series. Again though, I'm really just scratching the surface. Macro photography is such a complex subject, and I'm really just scratching the surface myself in many respects. This can really be said about many of my podcasts, but as I gain more experience and learn more myself, I'll be following up in future episodes. Today though, I'd like to touch on larger than life size, that is magnification of more than 1:1. If you aren't familiar with life size shooting or what life size or 1:1 means, or other terms like minimum focusing distance and working distance, I suggest you step back to episode 42 and brush up on some of these terms and other basic macro techniques. Okay, so I was wondering in what order to attack the remaining subjects that I want to touch on, which are going larger than life with the MPE 65mm macro lens from Canon, and the focusing problems this causes. Also, I want to talk about paralleling your composition when you have multiple subjects that you want in focus, and also using dedicated macro flash and using a second flash to illuminate the background. I was going to leave talking about the 65mm to the end, as it's probably the most specialized of these topics, but thinking about it, once you start using a lens that allows you to get this close, all the other stuff that I want to talk about becomes even more important. So although these things are still very relevant at 1:1 or life size macro photography, I'm going to discuss going larger than life first today, and then move on to the other subjects next week. First, to give you an idea of what I'm currently achieving with the MPE 65mm lens, let's take a look at image number 1023. Remember that I'm now producing enhanced podcasts, so if you are listening on an iPod or iTunes, the image will have already changed automatically. If you aren't listening to the enhanced version, you will need to go to my website at martinbaileyphotography.com and click on the podcasts link to go to the podcast page. There are various ways to listen and view the images, but it's all there on the podcast page, so please take a look. Even if you are listening with iTunes, if you are at a computer, take a look at the podcast page anyway. Getting back to image number 1023, you will see the stamen of a chameleon plant shot at 3x life size. That means that the little yellow anther, the tips of the stamen that have been recorded at 1.8mm wide on my 36mm wide sensor, are actually 3x larger at 1.8mm than their actual size in the real world. This really, these little tiny pieces, they look like little pieces of candy, in actuality are only around 0.5mm wide. There are a number of ways to shoot at larger than life size. Last week I touched on using an extension tube, but you can also use extension tubes with teleconverters or extenders, as Canon calls them, and also other methods, including using bellows between the camera and the lens to move the lens away from the camera but stop any light from entering the gap. You can also stack lenses or reverse lenses. A couple of books I've read that explain these techniques are John Shaw's Close-Ups in Nature and Tim Fitzharris's revised edition of Close-Up Photography in Nature. Both give some excellent advice on all aspects of macro photography, both smaller than and larger than life size. There's a link to these books on my recommended reading page if you are interested. Click recommended reading in the quick links section on the top page of my site and take a look. I've read these books like a child with eyes wide open, unwrapping presents on a Christmas morning. But I didn't follow any of the advice on lens stacking or reversing lenses. The problem with stacking is that you have to tape lenses together and to a certain extent butcher them, and I really don't have any lenses that I want to do that with. There are adapters available that allow you to join lenses by the filter screw threads. When reversing lenses, you also lose autofocus, and often, again, without butchering your lens to a certain degree, you only have a wide open aperture, which isn't that much use at these magnifications, because basically they just have such an incredibly shallow depth of field. There are, again, adapters that allow you to reverse lenses relatively easy, but as I looked into this more, I found some devices to actually help you reverse the lens and retain all of its functionality by linking it back up to the camera. The problem with this solution was that it cost around $1,000, which was only about $100 less than what I eventually paid for my final choice, which was a brand new MPE 65mm f2.8 1-5 times lens from Canon. This is, of course, fully supported for use with Canon EOS cameras and has a connector for the macro twin light that I'll talk about next week. And I don't have to butcher any of my existing lenses either. So, as the name implies, the MPE 65 goes from life size to 5x life size magnification. The shot we are currently looking at, as I said, was shot at 3x. The shutter speed was 1/200th of a second with f8 at ISO 200. I was using the macro twin light MT24EX flash unit. As I say, I'll go into detail and more on the flash unit next week. But in the simplest use, you really just have to switch the camera to manual mode, and then select the shutter speed and the aperture and let the flash do the rest. I often find that I reduce the flash exposure compensation by around 2/3 of a stop, but apart from that, the camera really does just do the rest for you. From an artistic perspective, I'd chosen to shoot this subject from almost above, so as to maximize the drop-off in depth of field as we look down the shaft of the flower's stamen. With two of the four white petals from this flower filling most of the background. I framed this shot to crop the petals slightly, but you can see the petals end from the darkened corners, allowing you to fill out the rest of the shot, orienting the mental image in your mind. The patch of green at the top was within the range of the twin light, so it found its way into the shot, which I don't mind, as it's all totally out of focus and just adds a nice splash of green there. But the background itself falls into total darkness in the top of the image at the left there, because it receives no light from the flash. Natural light at these settings was not going to illuminate the background in any way. There are two reasons for this. The first is that I was working in a park like a small wood, with a dense canopy of leaves above and all around, and the sun was already quite low in the sky. The other reason is in how this the aperture of this lens works. The smallest aperture of the lens is f16, which might not seem that small for a lens with an inherently small depth of field due to the very close working distance. However, the effective F number is smaller than that displayed by the camera. This is due to the design of the lens and the fact that the F numbers displayed are those for when the lens is focused on infinity, despite this lens not being able to focus on infinity. The formula to calculate the actual aperture is F number times magnification plus 1, with the magnification plus 1 part in parentheses. So when you are shooting at f2.8 at 1 times magnification, or life-size magnification of 1 plus 1 equals 2, obviously, and then multiplying the f2.8 of the aperture by 2 gives you 5.6. So the effective aperture at life size when you have the aperture set to f2.8 is actually 5.6. If you go to a magnification of 2, we have to multiply 2.8 by 3 to get f8.4. In the same way, f2.8 at 3 times magnification is f11.2, and at 4 times it becomes f14, and 5 times 16.8. So even if I'm shooting with the lens wide open at f2.8, if I shoot at 5 times, I'm already effectively at quite a very small aperture. As we start to stop down the lens aperture, the same formula gives us f16 effectively for f8 at life size, then f24 for 2 times, f32 for 3 times, f40 for 4 times, and f48 for 5 times magnification. If you recall, I was shooting image number 1023 of the chameleon plant at f8 at 3 times magnification, so we now know that I had an effective aperture of f32, which doesn't seem quite as wide anymore. As far as the end of the scale goes, f16 gives us an effective aperture of 32, 48, 64, 80, and 96 as we move through the life size to 5 times magnification. As I'm using a camera with TTL or through the lens metering, apart from the fact that at high magnifications the viewfinder does become quite dark, I don't have to worry too much about the small apertures as the camera does the calculations for me. The formula for setting the exposure manually though are plus 2 stops for life size, plus 3 for 2 times, plus 4 for 3 times, and then for some reason it's plus 4.5 for 4 times and plus 5 stops for 5 times magnification. Okay, so I know this will start to give you a number overload, but before we move away from the numbers, finally I wanted to let you know just how shallow the depth of field is at these apertures. Firstly, an interesting fact to note is that the lens only has a depth of field of more than 1 millimeter deep when used at life size and stopped down to f8 or smaller apertures. Any magnification, any other magnification, cannot give you a depth of field of more than 1 millimeter. F2.8 at life size has a depth of field of 0.396 millimeters. F4 gives you slightly over 0.5 millimeter. F5 gives you 0.792 millimeters. And from F8, you finally have 1.12 millimeters. F11 gives you almost 1.6 millimeters, and F16 gives you a massive 2.24 millimeters. Of course, I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but I think you get the picture. Once you start shooting at 2 times or more, all apertures give you a depth of field of less than 1 millimeter. To give you the extremes at largest and smallest apertures for each magnification, 2 times gives you 0.148 millimeters at 2.8, that is, f2.8, to 0.84 millimeters at f16. 3 times gives you 0.088 millimeters at f2.8, to 0.498 millimeters at f16. Four times gives you 0.062 millimeters at f2.8 to 0.35 at f16. Finally, at five times, you get a depth of field of 0.048 millimeters at f2.8 and 0.269 at f16. And that's it for numbers for now. So by now, you're probably wondering how you switch between the various magnifications and how you focus this lens. Let's take a look at a photo of the gear that I used in this last shot to make it easier to explain. In image number 1022, you can see my Canon EOS 5D camera with the MPE 65mm macro lens, the Canon Macro Twinlight MT24EX flash unit, and the Canon Angle Finder C. All of this is sitting on a really right stuff focusing rail, which I'll explain in detail next week. But it's basically used for fine-tuning of the focus by moving the camera back and forth. In this shot, the lens is fully extended to five times. The 65mm lens is actually only 10 centimeters or 4 inches in length, which is just a little longer than the focusing ring on the barrel that we can see in the middle of the lens here. This length is when the lens is set for 1:1 or life-size photography. As you turn the focusing ring, the lens extends from the front and the back as it zooms through the magnifications from life-size to 5x magnification, which is what we see here with the lens fully extended. Now, if you notice, I've just said that we turn the focusing ring to zoom through the magnifications. So how do we focus? In practice, really, you can turn the focusing ring to make focus adjustments, but as this is changing the magnification, if you want to retain magnification, you must move the camera back and forth. Even if you turn the focusing ring itself, the amount of focusing possible by turning this ring is minimal, because as you turn it more, the magnification changes so much that you have to recompose the shot. In my last shot, where I wanted to just partially crop the flower petals, had I used the focusing ring to set the focus, the whole composition would have just basically gone out of the window. By the way, as I mentioned earlier, this lens cannot focus to infinity. Unlike the 100mm macro or other macro lenses that you can focus to infinity with and therefore double the lens's usefulness as like a portrait lens, things like that, the MPE 65mm cannot. The minimum focusing distance measured to the film plane or sensor is 24 centimeters at 5x to 31 centimeters at life size. The working distance, that is the distance from the front of the lens, is fractionally over 10 centimeters for life size, and it's just over 4 centimeters for 5x magnification photography. The focus for any given magnification is a constant. It can't be changed. The only thing that you can do is to change the magnification, allowing you to effectively focus anywhere between 24 and 31 centimeters, or move the camera back and forth so that the subject falls at the right spot for any given magnification. So now I'm sure you'll be able to appreciate that with depth of field this shallow, no practical way of focusing the lens well without moving the camera back and forth, and effective apertures as small as f/96, this is not the lens for the faint-hearted. With the slightest breeze causing subject movement, blurring your shots to boot, if you want to go larger than life-size, you're going to have to take some extra precautions that you don't need to consider right now. Last week, I mentioned that it took me around 9 months after I bought my 100mm macro lens to really start to get shots that I was pleased with. and that was at a maximum magnification of 1:1, just life size. Sure, I was not spending a whole lot of time trying to overcome the difficulties, and now that you have learned by all my mistakes, it should probably not take you as long either. But I'm really just pushing the point that macro photography takes a lot more patience than most other types of 35mm photography. Once you go larger than life size, though, we have a whole new bunch of difficulties and limitations thrust upon us. If I haven't bored you silly already and you are still interested, tune in again next week. I'll finally get around to explaining some of the ways to make life a little bit easier. So that's about it for today. Some of you will have found this heavy going, and there's now going to be one more part to this series, for now anyway. One piece of housekeeping before we close is that I will have locked the rainy days assignment shortly after I release this episode, so voting will have been turned on by the time you listen to this. There'll be a small black vote button above the photo when viewed full size, and you'll be able to change your vote after you've voted until voting ends. Originally, I announced that voting would be possible until the end of Sunday, the 9th of July, but I might need to bring this in by just a few days for personal reasons. I'll then announce the winner and enable comments and ratings in the assignment gallery after that. So that's it for this week. Have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.